This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
If you were with us in the last hour, we spoke live with Ken Cuccinelli. He is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. He was kind enough to join us for a few moments there in the first half hour and shared his perspective on the big national news breaking this week that he has won in federal court. Federal Judge Henry Hudson, appointed by George W. Bush, ruling that the individual mandate that citizens buy health care legislation is unconstitutional. So we heard from Ken Cuccinelli giving his perspective, and now let's talk with Dahlia Lithwick of Slate and Newsweek, the author of an essay posted last night, just after 8 o'clock. You work late, Dahlia. called Dream a Little Dream, Why the Cuccinelli Healthcare Win in Virginia Matters More Than You Think. Is that a reaction to people, you think, who were just writing it off saying, oh, this isn't a big deal?
Well, you know, it's been very interesting because it's a halfway point between, you know, the Obama administration was at pains to say this was a big nothing, you know, that two other federal courts have already ruled on the mandate and found it to be constitutional, and nobody paid attention to that, and everybody's all excited about this. And the administration is also saying, you know, there's 12 other lawsuits that didn't even make it past the starting gate. You know, judges have dismissed them for various reasons. So really, you know, the score is sort of 14-1 if the Obama administration is scoring it, and they want to make it very clear this was not a big deal. Conversely, as I'm sure you heard from Attorney General Cuccinelli, this is a huge deal to people who oppose the Obama health care reform, and they really feel like this is the thin edge of the wedge. This is the beginning of the end of Obamacare. And so I think that I was trying to find a middle ground and say, look, it's a very symbolic victory, but it's probably only a symbolic victory. But I think more than anything, to me, what it signifies is that a lawsuit that 7 or 8 months ago was seen as, you know, nothing short of frivolous is now quite a serious thing, at least in the hands of some courts. And that's something that I think people who support health reform really need to take seriously.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick, a senior editor and legal correspondent for Slate.com. You can read her terrific work there regarding a host of jurisprudence and legal issues here in America. I just want to correct something now. The newsroom here at WINA just basically, they just reported that Henry Hudson has found the new health care legislation unconstitutional. That's not accurate. He found one small aspect of it, the individual mandate, unconstitutional. And he went out of his way to say, and Dahlia, you flesh this out for us, he went out of his way to say that I'm not talking about any other part of it. I'm only going to say that the individual mandate, what section 1501 is unconstitutional, and anything quote unquote directly dependent on that is what I'm talking about. But he didn't have anything to say about the rest of it.
That's exactly right. He didn't do what the Cuccinelli lawsuit expressly sought, which was, one, an injunction. In other words, enjoin the thing from even going into effect. He declined to do that. He said, look, a lot of this doesn't go into effect until 2013 at the very earliest. There is no urgency for me to stay the entire law. So he declined to do that. And as you said, the other thing that was sought by the plaintiffs in this suit was that if he found one piece of it unconstitutional, he strikes down the thing in its entirety. And as you point out, Coy, he expressly declined to do that. He said, I'm going to sever this provision from the rest of the law. He sort of quoted the Supreme Court preference for doing that, even if, and this is technical but important, the law doesn't on its face contain a severability provision. In other words, most properly drafted statutes say, look, if the courts find one chunk unconstitutional, the rest of it stands. Congress just forgot to do that in this legislation. So I think there was some question that maybe he wouldn't sever the unconstitutional bits from the constitutional bits. He declined to do that. He said, as you said, only the provisions that have to do with the individual mandate are struck down. I'm not going to do anything else. And so in a sense, it's a very limited ruling, and certainly much more limiting than what the plaintiffs sought.
So a victory, but really, legally here, it's a weak victory. Is that right?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things I've been chasing down today, and I'm not a health reform expert by any means, and one of the things that's been very interesting is to see the two different responses to this in terms of if going forward courts continue to strike down the mandate, does that scuttle the entire health reform law? And it's really interesting because, for instance, the New York Times editorial page says, oh, absolutely not. Ezra Klein at the Washington Post has, I think, an interesting piece saying, absolutely not. This is going to go forward with or without the mandate. The insurance companies are going to have to scramble. The states are going to have to scramble. Congress is going to have to scramble. But they can work around this. Alternatively, I've seen an awful lot of reporting that suggests otherwise, that without the mandate, the whole thing fails, because the mandate is the only way to get folks to pay into a system that otherwise can't work. So I have to say I'm not enough of a healthcare expert to sort out how damaging it would be to the statute as a whole if the mandate continues to be found unconstitutional up through the courts. But I really do think it's something that we need to sort out going forward, because I think it's a critical factual question that I don't think the legal folks have an answer to.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick about the big news this week, national news, that Ken Cuccinelli has won in federal court here in Virginia. And this, of course, is at some point going to the Supreme Court. Ken Cuccinelli broke some news with us this afternoon, Dahlia. I guess we were the first ones here in the state to report it, that he said he had just heard from the Justice Department that had denied their request to expedite this process to get this case to the Supreme Court. So now he said they're literally sitting in the office today trying to figure out do they make a direct appeal to the Supreme Court. Explain this to us for folks like me who are just ignorant about the process.
Well, this is just very technical, and I think in some sense it's very technical and a Hail Mary. There is a procedure for expediting review, for bypassing the intermediate appellate courts, COI, and saying this is so critically important, this is of vital national importance, we're just going to skip the Fourth Circuit altogether and go straight to the Supreme Court. I think that it was a long shot that the Justice Department would have agreed to that, and frankly, even had the Justice Department agreed, I'm not at all certain the court would have agreed to hear it. I think the court is going to say, look, we want to see how this plays out in all the reviewing courts that are looking at it. There's a case that's going to be heard in Thursday in Florida. That is the other 20 states' attorney generals are all massed together to sue in Florida. So I think there's a sense that as these cases aggregate around the country and come up through the appeals court, we're going to have a much more fully developed record. We're going to have a lot more judges to look at.
Right.
So really, I think one of the things that's interesting about this lawsuit is that Cuccinelli was in a little bit of a foot race with the Florida litigation to see who was going to get heard first and who's going to make their way to the court first. As an inside baseball matter, I think there was a real fear that this one would get to the Supreme Court first, because I think it's not as strong on the merits as the Florida case. So I think what you are seeing is just a little bit of, sort of dancing around to try to be the very, very first ones at the Supreme Court. But my very strong sense is this is going to take a year or two to play out, as I say, around the country and up and down through the appeals courts. And I suspect the Supreme Court prefers to have it that way.
We're honored to be talking with Dahlia Lithwick of Slate and Newsweek. Let's go to Jim in Charlottesville. Jim, go right ahead.
Hey, Coy. How you doing?
Very good.
I just wanted to mention that, of course, anyone can get access to this brief, and I did read through it last night, and fortunately, it's really written in very plain English. And I guess I have a different impression in terms of the degree of victory, because, I mean, very clearly the individual mandate, and I think the judge referred to it as being the linchpin or whatever of the whole system. And the only reason he couldn't really kill the whole bill, because, and he was almost sarcastic in his description, he said, this is 2,700 pages, and there are many items in here that are completely unrelated to health care. And he goes on to say, in fact, there's over 400 of them. So I think that's the reason he wouldn't, throw out the whole thing.
Yeah. Jim, thank you for the call. Dahlia, you want to respond to that?
I agree. I think that that's exactly what happened, that plaintiffs thought that he would scuttle the whole bill. And he said there's just way too much going on. And I think he cited just a policy preference in the courts to not strike down entire pieces of legislation, even if they don't have a severability clause, that you try to save as much as you can. And I think that's what he did. as I said, as to the factual question of whether or not this is the linchpin and the litigation, the whole piece of legislation fails without it, is simply a sort of health policy question that I just don't think Judge Hudson was able to answer, and I'm not entirely sure that any of us who can't predict the future can answer.
Let me ask you a political question. I am fascinated by the fact that what Henry Hudson ruled on, the individual mandate, actually began as a Republican idea. Back in the 90s, Bob Dole, Orrin Hatch, Charles Grassley, this was their thing. And they came up with it as the counter proposal to Hillary Clinton's single payer idea. And this was the individual mandate was the way that you would involve the marketplace and insurers. And
John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute.
Free enterprise idea.
It's a terrific honor to welcome back Pulitzer Prize winning
Governor Mitt Romney's health care reform plan in Massachusetts. That's what it's based on, is this individual mandate. So I'm fascinated by this idea that the Republicans now, 15 years later, 10 years later, are attacking this and got it ruled unconstitutional. And I presented this to Cuccinelli, and the Attorney General said, I don't care whose idea it is, it's unconstitutional.
Well, I think that does go to, you know, two quick observations. One is just that the country has moved quite dramatically to the right since then. And, you know, don't ask, don't tell is another example, right? We've watched John McCain go from saying, you know, oh, I am all for, you know, doing away with don't ask, don't tell to moving to the right. So I think it's just generally says where the center has moved. But I think more profoundly, what Attorney General Cuccinelli would say is we are at a moment in this country where regardless of what you know, Republicans want in Congress, the Tea Party has spoken. It has said that it is time for a massive constitutional upheaval. We need to revisit not just the Commerce Clause jurisprudence that has been in existence for decades, not just the birthright citizens provision in the 14th Amendment, but just go bam, bam, bam through the Constitution. Do we really want direct election of senators? Do we really want, you know, everything is up for negotiation now. And I think that this lawsuit represents the sensibility that it doesn't matter where this came from. The government has been overreaching, interfering in our lives, telling us what to do since 1942, Wickard v. Filburn, you know, the case that had to do with how much wheat farmers could grow for their personal use. And since that time, we've been on the wrong track. And so it doesn't matter what president says or what case law says or what the Congress enacts. We need to go back to a time where the balance of power between states and the federal government, between states and other states, and between you know, individuals and the government is rejiggered so that we have more freedom and liberty. I mean, this was very self-consciously styled as that kind of document. This isn't just about the individual mandate. It's about asking the courts to take us back to a time before the sort of FDR New Deal revolution in the courts, where individuals have much more say over what the federal government can tell them to do.
Yeah. Let me ask you this before we let you go. Now, relate that whole idea with this phrase, radical conservative constitutionalism, which I heard used last night on the Rachel Maddow show. You were a guest there, and she sort of summed it up that this is another example of radical conservative constitutionalism.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's of a piece with what I'm describing, that I think that, I want to be clear that I think this is a very exciting moment where Americans are pulling out their constitutions and really looking at them and saying, you know, I'm not sure I agree, says Christine O'Donnell, with the wall between church and state that we've come to accept as constitutionally protected. I'm not sure I agree with the birthright citizen provisions of the 14th Amendment. I'm not sure I agree that we should be electing the Senate directly. And so I think we are looking at a moment where there are an awful lot of Americans who want to revisit these foundational constitutional ideas and say, are we on the wrong track? And so I look at this Commerce Clause challenge and I say, this isn't about how we read the Commerce Clause in 2000 or 2005 or 1995. These are all critical Supreme Court cases on the Commerce Clause. This is about reading the Commerce Clause the way the framers would have read it. And so I think it is a sort of radical project because it wants to certainly eradicate decades of jurisprudence and precedent. But I think it's an exciting project because it means that everybody is doing their reading and really thinking about the Constitution. And I suspect that even though we don't agree on what the Commerce Clause should constrain and on what the 14th Amendment should do, I think it's in a very, very interesting moment that this Supreme Court, this challenge to the Obama health care reform comes along as a sort of jumping off point to say, how much are we going to revisit? How much are we going to go back to the drawing board?
Dahlia Lithwick is senior editor and legal correspondent for Slate.com, columnist for Newsweek. Check out her most recent essay, Dream a Little Dream, at Slate.com. Dahlia, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.